Okay. Welcome, everybody. Let's go ahead and get started. We have a quorum here. We want to welcome everybody to our December Inland Port board meeting. Thank you to everybody for digging out of the snow. We just were joking that every time this morning when I was shoveling my driveway, I was thinking, for the Great Salt Lake, for the Great Salt Lake, for the Great Salt Lake. So it's great to have all this precipitation. We all fought traffic and snow and everything else to be here. And so thank you very much for that. Our intent this morning is to move immediately into a closed session and then to reconvene the public meeting as quickly as possible upon completion of the business of the closed session. We have a full public agenda. Last count, let's see how many. We've got 17 items on the agenda. So it's a busy day. It's a representative of the incredible work the Inland Port team are doing. Due to some scheduling issues, it made a lot of sense for us to do this closed session. Now, at the top of the meeting, we'll then go back into the public meeting and move forward with all those agenda items. We'll now vote to go into this closed session. The meeting will be held now at 8 a.m. at 350 State Street for the purpose of a strategy session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation, strategy sessions to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property. Since public discussion would disclose the appraisal or estimated value of the property under consideration or prevent the public body from completing the transaction on the best possible terms, as described in Section 524205 of Utah Code and Sections 524204 of the Open and Public Meetings Act. I will note that on our agenda, we've tried to provide a little bit more detail on this closed session. The agenda item lists that this session is being held for consideration of the potential acquisition of two land parcels within the jurisdiction. So with that, do I have a motion to move into a closed session?
So move.
All right. Abby, thank you for moving. And can I get a second? All right. Representative Schultz is seconding that motion. Thank you. Tanisa, will you please do a roll call vote? And I'll get your mic turned on.
Perfect. Mike Schultz? Abby Osborne?
Yes.
Miles Hansen?
Yes.
Perfect. That is voted to go into closed session.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll now temporarily adjourn the public portion of our board meeting. All in favor? Aye. All right. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Now, yep, got the mic on. Okay. Thank you, everybody, so much from the public that is rejoining us here in the room and for everybody joining us on Zoom. We had a productive conversation. It is now 9:17, and we're going to go ahead and resume the public portion of our meeting. And just for the public's awareness, when we do these closed sessions, we're working to do a couple of things. One, provide as much detail as we can in the agenda. And the other is on the meeting minutes, we'll always note the time that we conclude the closed session, whether we do it at the beginning of the meeting, in the middle, or at the end, just so then at least everybody can see exactly how much time we spend deliberating on some of these issues in a closed session. Before we get started on the rest of the agenda items, we wanted to alert you that per the agenda, we will have two public comment periods. The first will be to receive comments specific to items the board will vote on today: the Salt Lake Project Area Master Plan, the UIPA Strategic Business Plan, and the UIPA Whistleblower and Internal Control Program policies. Public comment not specific to those items will be heard at the end of the meeting after all the board agenda items have taken place. We will take both in-person and virtual comments, and we'll just rotate between the two. In order to speak during public comment, please fill out a comment card. Please note if your comments are related to the items to be voted on or if they are general comments, then please hand your card to Lynn, and she will number it according to the order which she receives them. And Lynn just raised her hand. Thank you, Lynn, for that. All comment cards will be accepted up until the start of the comment period in which they will be offered. For those who wish to comment virtually, please wait to enter the queue until instructed by me that the public comment period is open. Anyone in the queue prior to that time will be cleared. Those who wish to speak, please use the raise hand tool at the bottom of your Zoom screen. When the first public commenter begins, we will no longer accept the additions to the queue. All comments will be 2 minutes. For the general comment period, we will use the allotted time left in the meeting following completion of the agenda. We will alternate again between in-person and virtual. Okay, we'll now go ahead and move on to approval of meeting minutes. May I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes from our November 21, 2022 meeting?
Happy to do that, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Abby is just motioned and...
I'll second that motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz is seconding. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Fantastic. Okay. We'll go ahead and now move to Mr. Ben Hart, who has been nominated for Utah of the Year in the Salt Lake Tribune for doing all this amazing work. And again, just before we jump into this, again, thank you to Ben and everybody on staff. I know that a tremendous amount of work goes into these meetings. And so a huge thanks to everybody on this incredible Inland Port team that are doing everything they can to maximize the value of this entity to the public. So, Ben, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to say I am emblematic in that nomination. It really is for the amazing work done by the board and also with the team with the Inland Port. I will say I'm hopeful I do not lose to the mosquitoes at the Great Salt Lake. So we'll see how voting goes. But just a couple of quick items. I'm going to ask. I've got Ben that will help me with one of these items and then Stephen as well. I'm going to ask that we not go off of slides, but that we just move through our items very quickly. Ben, do you want us to give us just a quick update on the audit?
Yes, thank you. We just want to talk about the financial audit report that we received back since the last board meeting. We had a good discussion with the Finance and Audit Subcommittee. Dan was there. We talked and went through this audit in a little bit of more detail than we'll do today, but just want to give you a brief overview. We did get a clean audit report, an unqualified opinion, which is in audit speak kind of as good as you can do. They didn't find anything materially wrong with our financial statements, which is the good news. They also looked at some compliance issues. They looked at our internal controls over financial reporting, as well as just our compliance with budgetary procedures of the state. They did have a couple items that came up there. Didn't affect their opinion in any way. They did identify kind of some significant year-end adjustments that had to be made. And they also identified that there were some overspending compared to the approved budget. Those are both related to the same thing, and it's Representative Schultz's favorite project out at 700 North. And what happened is there were some invoices that should have been accrued and should have been charged the budget in FY22 that weren't done. They were charged in 23. The auditors identified that. And when they put them back into 22, that was the reason for the budget overrun there, as well as for these financial adjustments at year end that they identified. So we feel like we have a good handle on the issues that happen and have taken steps to fix them in the future. So again, nothing major that affected the financial statements as a whole, but did want to bring that to your attention. That's all I had, unless there's any questions from the board.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Ben, back to you.
All right. So I am just going to cover very quickly, if you want to come up, Stephen, to get ready. Sorry. I'm just going to cover very quickly. We've received a request from the Westside team. There's numerous people that are involved with that for our potential financial participation. It will not take, it's a reduced amount, less than $30,000 to help with outreach related to the environmental work that EPA is doing. As a staff, we feel like this is something that is worthwhile. We've been really impressed with the EPA team. They've had some good recommendations. And so for us to be able to do outreach, work with the Westside community, we feel like is very valuable. So per our commitment, we just want to make sure that the board is aware of any of these items that we're entering into in terms of financial contracts. So I just want to make the board aware of that request and our intention to comply. And if there are any questions, comments, or feedback, we're definitely open to that.
I would just say that I met with the EPA team starting, I think, in June and then July. I also have been very impressed. Getting the sustainability piece of this is absolutely critical, and so I'm very supportive of this.
Stephen?
Okay. Thanks, Ben, and members of the board. I just wanted to give a quick update on our progress in getting our truck parking solution into place at the facility at 5 South and 5100 West. We are now in the throes of working with our potential operator on an agreement. May potentially either be an operator agreement or a sublease. We're working on that right now. And just as a quick refresher, that is about 6.5-acre, 7-acre piece of property that's already paved, already has striping for truck parking. We want to just make use of that to address issues of parking on the sides of the streets and idling overnight and things along those lines. Just a couple highlights on the proposal that we're working through. This would be about what we're looking at as an agreement that would take us through the conclusion of that property's lease that we have on it, approximately 9 years. And what we're looking at is a revenue share model with that team that would, again, help cover costs of that lease, other upgrades we may do to make that facility operate. This would cover short-term parking, staging, trailer drop parking, all of those things that we're seeing on the sides of the road right now. The operator, the tenant, would be really responsible for the maintenance of that facility, the day-to-day operations of it. We would look at maybe sharing some of the cost with things like asphalt. We are in discussion with them with sharing some of the cost with like restroom and bathroom facilities, which we absolutely have to have at that facility to make it clean and operational. And then just discussions through things like marketing and that as well. So we're really, like I say, tying up, I think, a lot of the details of this and really pushing to have this proposed agreement in place. We would like to get that sooner rather than later, but by the end of January at the latest.
Stephen, that was perfect. And let me just mention to the board. So in a June meeting, this board gave approval for the executive director to move forward and finalize the agreement. I still feel like we want to make sure that the board knows about this. And one of the other things, Stephen has done an amazing job working this. In prior versions of this presentation, we talked about potential revenue sources back to the port. That is potentially on the table, but I've asked that we not consider those and show those numbers because they're revenue projections. For us, this is probably a little bit of a loss. And if we do get money back, that's fantastic. But this is a significant public benefit. We've also had stakeholders who've suggested that we find ways to incorporate solar, clean energy, and other things like that, in amenities like that into this project. We'll continue to do that, but I want to be able to portray this the right way. It's probably going to be a little bit of a loss for us, but if it does work out, then the port may actually end up earning some revenues back. The board has given approval. We just want to make sure that you know the latest. We have some really good slides, and we will send them around to the board.
Right. Thanks, Ben. Representative Schultz.
Thanks. Just a quick comment. What do we think it's going to cost the port?
Well, right now we've got a lease that we're paying about $1.2 million on for the building and that property. That's where we're probably taking the loss. This will actually help offset that loss a little bit, which is a great thing. And if I think the board knows this, we found a tenant for the actual building itself as well. And so at the end of the day, we think it may end up only being like $30,000 a month instead of the much larger amount that we would lose. But there is the potential that this could actually come back to us if this is really successful. Stephen, is that?
Well, Steve reported that we may share in some costs of asphalt and things like that. I think that was more my question. How much are we looking at?
Yeah, so the asphalt we're looking at right now, we're still kind of figuring that out, and it depends on how much usage that gets. At the most, that would maybe be about $500,000 over the course of the term of the 9 years. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I appreciate, Ben, the awareness and bringing this to the board. As a public entity, we have to be very, very rigorous with being good stewards of public dollars, and as a public entity, everything we do has to have a public benefit. Just because we are talking about, you know, some expenditures here and maybe we can make it profitable at some point, but a loss. Victoria, can you just take a quick minute and talk about what this would mean to the community as we consider the public benefit that comes with these dollars?
If you ever told Victoria, who's majoring in music, that she would care so much about truck parking, I would not have believed you, but this is it's impossible to exaggerate the importance of this particular project to the immediate experience in my neighborhood. The number of idling truck cabs that are lining Redwood Road, that line the fairgrounds, that are throughout the West Side in particular, but the city in general, They're spewing PM2.5 directly into the windows of my children as they speak. By removing this and not only offering greater dignity to those truck drivers who should have safe places that provide for their needs where they can take care of themselves, it also provides a greater physical safety to my neighborhood in that we know who should be there and who shouldn't be there. It provides an environmental safety in that once we stop the need for idling, we'll stop that PM2.5 from spewing at all hours of the night. This is one of those projects that seems small, but the overall implications are going to be felt on numerous axes, in addition to just being one of the most incredible good faith signs to my historically disenfranchised community that we, as the workforce that will make this place a success, are important to the city, the state, and all the stakeholders.
Thank you, Victoria. I mean, clear public benefit. And I appreciate the approach to figure out how do we make it as sustainable as possible from a financial perspective. And Stephen, thanks for all the work on it.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, Ben.
All right. That concludes our executive director's report. If you're okay with it, Mr. Chair and board, I'll move on to the other items.
Yep. No, that's fantastic. And maybe I know these are the three action items and then we'll open up for some public comment. Why don't you go ahead, Ben, and just run us through these three, calling up the appropriate member of the team to help us do that, at which point we can then have some discussion and get public input and then proceed accordingly.
All right. So the next several items, Alan will cover the first one with the area master plan. Chad will cover business plan. Amy will cover both the whistleblower policy and the internal controls policy. At that point, we'll be ready for the public comment. We will cover these in short order. I just want to up front acknowledge a couple of things. Is particularly in one, recognize Amy for her great work on the policy development. As we've been looking at the business plan and the master plan, I know I'm going to take some lumps. My sense is there's going to be some of those in the public who feel like there's not the level of detail that they would want from these programs. And I will take full responsibility for this. I want the public to be aware it's not because I didn't want to put in the time and effort on the weekends or whatever it is to build this plan out further. This was a very, very deliberate decision. It was my very, very deliberate decision. And the reason that I feel strongly about this, unless the board tells me otherwise, is that we can only walk and should only walk as fast as what we have alignment from all of our stakeholders. If we can't get alignment from all of our stakeholders to develop out all these details further, I don't want to put it in front of the board as a way of adopting something that not everyone's on board with. And I feel really strongly about this. And so I'm sorry for those who will criticize, rightly so, that there is not the level of detail that they had hoped. I hope that you'll give me some deference in the sense of what I'm seeing behind the scenes and how far we can actually take this document, these documents right now. I want to emphasize these are the beginning, not the end. I had somebody, and I'm going to give him a shout out, Richard Holdman, who's awesome, and he gave me some feedback last night. I'd really like to incorporate what he sent to me into future documents as well. But the thing I don't want to do is move out in a way that other stakeholders, cities, people who are involved with this would say, well, I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't know what that means. You know, there was a lot that I felt like we just couldn't add. So I'm going to take responsibility for that. I'm going to say again, this is a beginning point, not the end point, and just say the other part of this is we are not moving away from our logistics mission. That is our critical mission for our organization. But there's also, particularly in the Northwest Quadrant, things that we can handle in the short term that really do need attention. And we're setting forth a plan on what the logistics would be long term. And so with that overview.
And Ben, I'll just jump in really quick. You know, as a board, the direction that we've given Ben and the team is to lay the foundation for this next phase of the Utah Inland Port Authority. Mike, you've built a lot of houses. How costly is it if you lay a foundation and have to go back after the fact and change the foundation? Yeah, you don't want to do that. That's not fun at all. And so these documents are designed to give a structure, but you can't lay that foundation. You can't lock in that structure if there's any question at all that we're going to have to go back and make significant changes,
right,
which means that we're moving as expeditiously as we possibly can. We're creating the strategic structure in which this entity is going to continue to build and operate for many, many years to come. And we absolutely have to get it right. And that's why the public comment from Richard and many others in the work of Ben, you and the team is absolutely critical. that make sure we get this foundation right, make sure we get the structure right so that we don't have to go back and make significant revisions down the road, because that would be disruptive and very costly and distract us from executing and getting down to this tactical level of detail that we're very much in some areas, and we're very urgently moving towards in other areas. And so I think that the depth is exactly where it needs to be in terms of the foundation and the structure. And then we'll just keep working really hard over the weeks to come in order to add in more details as we get down to tactical execution of the strategic plan.
Alan?
Great. So as you'll recall, in our last board meeting, we talked about a proposed approach to the master plan. And in that, it was to include two phases. Phase one was to align the existing plans that are already out there, if the city, the state, UDOT, other stakeholders, because there's been a lot of good work that's been done on that. So phase one is to align with that. Phase two is to work with the city and the county on developing a logistics infrastructure plan, as well as addressing the three studies that were outlined in the interlocal agreement: the health impact study, the community impact assessment, and then the traffic study. And I have to say, Victoria, the city has been great to work with, and the county as well. And so they've been really good partners. The timing is once the board approves this, that we would work on both phases simultaneously, and we'd start immediately. And I know Representative Schultz, last time you brought up pushing us at a faster timeline. And so we're looking to do that as well. So
that's great. Any questions, discussion from the board before we move on to the, and again, we're going to go through these three action items, get the presentations, have the discussion, and then we'll go ahead and get some public comment before we vote on each of the three. Any questions, comments? Okay, Alan, thank you. And I will note for anybody who was in the last meeting, Alan gave an in-depth presentation that's available publicly. Okay, go ahead, Chad.
All right, good morning. In our last meeting, UIPA introduced a strategic business plan that will guide port activities from the years 2023 to 2027. Within this plan, you'll find that there's a goal to more fully meet statutory requirements. And in doing this, there's a focus on generating regional economic growth. This becomes the highlight, if not the main objective. And to support and achieve this objective, there are two breakdowns against that generational economic growth. The first is regional economic empowerment, and the second is finding solutions to connect domestic and global marketplaces. In breaking down regional economic empowerment, there are some objectives that the port will be going for to achieve that. Among those objectives, developing regional projects, developing project area master plans, like Alan just talked about, developing regional logistic projects, building regional industries, and then lastly, developing a strategic financial plan. In concert with doing this, we'll be targeting we're targeting regional economic empowerment. UIPA will also be developing solutions to connect our Utah base, with our domestic and global marketplaces. And in order to do that, we need to develop a statewide logistics plan that ensures this and makes it happen. Throughout the plan, you'll see activities that are being led out on and done in a collaborative manner, in a transparent manner, and also with accountability to our communities and our environment as well. Thank you for your time, and I'm open to any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you, Chad. Any questions, comment from any board members? Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Chad. Let's go ahead and move on to whistleblower policy and BPO-8 and internal control program BPO-9. Amy.
Thank you. I'm here to present these two policies up to the board for a vote. And of course, prior to that, as we've committed in our board policy review policy, that we would have this as part of public comment. We have not received any written commentary since we presented these two last. So I did want to, and I did confirm that with Tanisa just prior to this meeting. In addition, I just wanted to cover the highlights of what these two policies cover. Whistleblower really is for those acting in good faith that there is a vehicle for them to share ethical fraud issues in a way that protects their anonymity. We have, of course, talking to their direct supervisor, coming to me as the chief compliance officer, to leadership and to the board, as well as a whistleblower hotline that we're leveraging with the state auditor's existing whistleblower hotline, and providing that due diligence and follow through. So nothing has changed since the last time we've met on that. The other one that is up, again, for board approval is the internal control policy that covers how we manage risks, putting in controls to mitigate those risks, and looking at control testing and corrective actions where we see a gap in that. Follows the standard COSO international accepted model. And so those are the two that are up, and I have a lot of confidence in these, that they provide much needed protection and compliance for our organization, as well as fulfill, as our legislative audit report from last September, several of those checklist best practice items. So I will pause there, and I think turn it back to you, Chair Hansen, for public commentary.
Okay. Thank you very much for that presentation, all the work that went into these. Any questions, comments from the board? Okay. Thank you, Amy, for all the work on this. Unlike the strategy doc, the master plan, and the business plan, that's strategy, that's foundation, that's structure. These policies are fully baked, ready to execute on, critical for the organization. And so really appreciate all the work, Amy, that you and the team have put into this, as well as the public comment and the public process that's got us to this point now where between the two meetings, where everything's ready to go. So we'll go ahead and now invite public comment on the plans and policies we've just had presented to us. Tanisa, please open the queue. If you wish to give a comment virtually on these policy, now is the time to raise your hand to be added to the queue. Once we begin, we'll no longer accept any public comment cards or additions to our virtual queue. Please remember that all comments at this time must be limited to the plans and policies under consideration. Upon recognition, the speaker shall approach the microphone or will be unmuted to give their comment. All comments shall be directed to me as chair. Once your name is announced, you will have 2 minutes to speak. We'll alternate between in-person and virtual, and we'll hear comments on these policies for a maximum of 15 minutes. And with everything we have on the agenda today and in everybody's busy schedules, we're going to hold to that 15-minute period today. And as a reminder, any other general comments, we'll do that at the end of the meeting with time we have remaining in the meeting. So we'll go ahead and start. Here we have an in-person public comment. Stan Holmes, if you could please approach the microphone. We appreciate your patience. I know you've been here at 8 a.m. and waited through the closed session. And so we are very, very grateful for you being here this morning and look forward to hearing from you now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Stan Holmes, and I facilitate the satellite ports team of the Stop the Polluting Port Coalition. I'll start by thanking the new executive director, Ben Hart, who has graciously met with my team on several occasions. Director Hart suggests that a new era is beginning in which UEPA will be more forthright and transparent. I do have concerns regarding the draft strategic business plan and master plan. First, both are still quite obviously works in progress. They lack specificity needed to guide UEPA for the next 5 years and to justify additional public funding. The drafts have changed over the last month, and we await the final products. I'm reminded of an earlier UEPA board chair's remark that we're building the airplane as we fly it. That's not good. The original business plan was widely and justly criticized. Please don't repeat that. One thing that needs clarification is the actual statewide economic role intended for UEPA. UEPA literature claims that the Utah Inland Port is a statewide system. This week's business plan draft goes further, saying that UEPA has the authority to establish foreign trade zones as strategic nodes, I would call them satellite ports, in its unique role to coordinate statewide economic development and logistics. That is a leap. Is UEPA to replace the Office of Economic Opportunity and issue its own 5-year plan for Utah's economic future? This begs more questions. Who's in charge, and is anyone truly in charge? Recently, we've seen what happens when rogue actors, including a former Utah House Speaker and Sage Solutions personnel, try to slip through the cracks, misrepresenting themselves as UEPA partners. Please realize that folks are watching, my team, the auditor, the media. And lastly, good luck moving forward, keeping sustainability and accountability foremost. Thank you.
Stan, thank you very much for your comment, for your feedback, for your partnership as we continue to work together to get this right for all citizens of Utah across the state. Thank you. Tanise, let's go ahead and go to the first person in the virtual queue.
We will first hear from Fred Hayes.
Okay, Fred, go ahead.
Fred, are you there?
There. Can you hear me now?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to comment about the document structure, the width of the margins. For those of us that would like to review things on our phones, the width of the documents is so wide that it's difficult to just review those documents without panning. And so that goes to all the documents that I've read online. With regards to the Zoom window, I appreciate being able to look at the past meeting notes and see who's in attendance, both as board members and voting members and the public. It would be nice to be able to see who's actively watching, if you can arrange that on the Zoom window. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for that feedback. That's helpful as the team continues to work on ensuring that this public engagement is as productive as possible. Okay, we don't have any more in-person comments for this portion of the comment period. Let's go ahead and go to the next person in the virtual queue.
Perfect. So we will hear from Dita Seed next. After Dita Seed, we'll hear from Larry Dean.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, we hear you loud and clear, Dita. Hope you're doing well this morning.
I am on a snowy, snowy day. Okay, so the policy detail that you all are providing is very good. We're very, very grateful for that. But with regard to the business plan, at this point, it does seem a little bit like you're checking boxes. And I say that because I'm also concerned that you're apparently talking about buying land when you're still in this planning process. In these documents, the word generational is used, but the problem here is that the structure you mentioned, Chair Hansen, the structure, the foundation that this is built on, being sturdy. And at this point, there are huge questions looming out there, like how is stormwater pollution going to be controlled? There really isn't a plan in place for that. There isn't a sustainability plan yet. As you all know, Great Salt Lake is on the verge of ecological collapse, and that will be very limiting to economic growth. Building in the area north of I-80 has significant ecological consequences, and there are these logistical problems like the mosquitoes. There's the urban heat island effect. There's the issue I mentioned of stormwater pollution prevention, water use, destruction of wetlands, die-off of birds. I mean, we're looking at a catastrophe in the making. So those things need to be addressed, but really thoroughly before you move forward. Then just a couple of specific notes. CNG is not green. Hydrogen is only green if it's made with renewable energy. Finally, in the end, it seems that all of this has been about helping a few select large property owners, Rio Tinto, Colmena, Suburban Land Reserve, and possibly CITLA, and they've skated through the jurisdictional disputes and taken infrastructure handouts without providing value back for the community. So there are still many, many concerns about all of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Dita, for your comment. The issues you laid out are exactly why Ben and the team are working in overdrive to help to lean in and tackle all those challenges and many, many more that we didn't have time to to have in a 2-minute comment, but we appreciate your partnership, your engagement as we all work together on addressing the very issues that you laid out. Okay, Tanisa, who's next in the virtual comment queue?
So we will hear from Larry Dean, and then after Larry, we just have two more comments for this section, Malin Mensch and then Joan Gregory.
Okay, great. Thank you.
My name is Larry Dean. I'm a resident of Salt Lake City and a member of the Stop the Polluting Port Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today, and thank you to Ben Hart for his ongoing dialogue with our group. This proposed plan is full of vague language such as improve air quality and encourage green technology rather than requiring it. There's a dearth of detail. This is a half-baked plan to make a plan. Even if it were possible to build the plane while flying it, you still need a clearly identified destination. Hopefully more details are forthcoming. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your comment.
Okay, we will now hear from Malin Mensch, after which our last comment for this period will be Joan Gregory. Malin, are you there?
All right, I unmuted. So my name's Malin Mensch. My comments relate to the strategic business plan. Last month, a UEPA board member told a local audience that, quote, we want to find a second rail carrier as Union Pacific owns the market and it is not good for our economy. We need rail competition, unquote. This suggests that the board's new master plan will be to pursue a second rail carrier. Professor Leachman, Robert Leachman, is a renowned expert on supply chain design and operations at UC Berkeley. His white paper showed us why there would never be enough demand to support a transload facility in Salt Lake. I asked him whether there is likely to be enough demand to support another Class 1 railroad connecting LA and Salt Lake. And if so, is there some other kind of infrastructure the board could build to make that happen? This is his answer. The NSF is the only other Class 1 carrier in Salt Lake, and they only get there when they exercise trackage rights over Union Pacific's tracks from Denver through Salt Lake to Northern California. Using those rights is expensive, and this route is much too circuitous for imports and exports moving between LA and Salt Lake. The NSF could provide intermodal service on the Denver Northern California route, but they have never done it as the economics do not work. The NSF has a lower cost, more direct route between Denver and Los Angeles, but even in that lane, they do not provide intermodal service and cede the market to Union Pacific. So I am afraid the folks in Utah are stuck with Union Pacific for intermodal service. Even if the government someday makes railroads open access, I don't think a second railroad would bring much more intermodal traffic to or from Salt Lake. If a transloading facility wouldn't be economically viable, and a second carrier with a competing intermodal yard isn't viable,
okay.
And as Ben Hart recently told us, we already have enough warehouses.
Thank you very much for your comment and your participation this morning. We did reach the 2-minute mark, and in the spirit of moving through the agenda items and having comment at the end of the meeting, we're going to go ahead and proceed. So, Tanisa, I believe there's one more person in the virtual queue.
So, lastly, hear from Joan Gregory.
Okay. Joan, go ahead.
Hi, this is Joan. And just wanted to say thank you to Amy, who's making great progress on developing policies. I see that there are plans for regular policy review, which is essential to assure that UEPA's policies keep up with changes in their operations. We will be watching for those reviews and policy updates. kudos to Amy as well for creating a web page where all approved policies are posted in their final versions and all policies that are under development are listed. This is a great service to UEPA and to the public and is accessible on the Inland Port Authority website under policies. I have concerns about the plans for their lack of detail and action items. I share the concerns that others have identified and encourage you to address those concerns. One item that I wanted to point out is on page 3 of the Salt Lake Master Plan. I see the statement, which I've seen before. Phase 1 does not include the development of any logistics facilities. No time, money, or resources will be spent towards development of any logistics facilities until phase 2 of the Salt Lake Project Area Master Plan is completed. If that is the case, and since phase 2 is not completed, namely no community impact assessment, no health impact assessment, no traffic assessment have been completed, why would the board be considering the potential acquisition of 2 land parcels within the jurisdiction in this morning's closed session? I'm confused. Finally, I want to say thank you for accepting comments on these policies and plans in this 15-minute comment period before you take a vote on these items. This, too, is an important service to the public, creating an opportunity for greater openness and transparency. Thank you.
Great, Joan. Thank you very much for your comment. We all agree that Amy is doing a phenomenal job. And before we go and have some discussion and then go ahead and move to approve, just want to again reiterate, when we look at the strategic business plan, we want to have a very clear idea of what are we trying to accomplish? What's our vision, our mission, our key objectives? This accomplishes that, absolutely accomplishes that, lays that out very well. The next phase is figuring out the how. And that's where we get into more tactical planning and execution in working on the how of how we're going to accomplish these various objectives. The other thing is just in terms of process to note is phenomenal that we live in this hybrid world. I really appreciate the virtual participation of the public. It helps immensely in person where we can see people's faces, we can have engagement in dialogue. And so there's one thing that I would note is that moving forward, we may want to consider as a matter of policy asking people that are going to participate virtually to turn their videos on so we can see each other face to face and do that in the spirit of having as effective public engagement as we possibly can. Because Joan, I know through all of our engagements here in public meetings and elsewhere, that personal engagement is super important and it's a high priority for us to get this public engagement because it absolutely does shape my thinking as a board member, a fiduciary. And I know it does the other board members and for Ben and the management team as well. So that's something that we don't have to ground out. It's not on the agenda, but something that I think is worth noting. And Ben would ask that you talk to the staff about whether or not that would be feasible, what some of the challenges would be and how we can help facilitate that type of personal engagement, both in person and virtually. Representative Schultz, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually wanted to bring that up as well, so thank you for bringing that up. One thing in our legislative committees, we ask the chairs to make sure commenters from online turn their cameras on. I'd like to do that here at the UEPA board as well and make it a policy if it's not already policy. Do we need a motion to make that a policy? Or what process do we need to go through to make that a policy?
Yeah, that's a good question. Ben, Lyndon. Yeah, that does seem something that we can work on. So I would like to just give Ben and the team a chance to kind of think that through, make sure that's what we want to do. And then in that case, then we can go ahead and do that. And they just make sure we communicate that in advance of our next public meeting so that everybody has the right expectations going into it. So we can make that transition.
I think, and I appreciate it. I think this conversation is good and letting the public know as well that we're going to be requiring that in the future. So thank you.
Victoria.
I'd like special concessions for people who either lack the technological equipment to do so or the bandwidth. Oftentimes to do picture doesn't allow your audio to come through. So I would like special accommodations for those who might not have smartphones or other issues that would block that.
Yep. Thank you, Victoria. That's important as well. So Larry is our board secretary, working with Tanisa, Lynn, and Ben. Would appreciate if you could give some thought to this and figure out how we can implement it to facilitate this productive face-to-face public engagement in person and virtually. We'll also take you through some of the limitations and challenges that absolutely do exist that we want to be very mindful of. I would hate for this to create new obstacles for anybody in the public to participate in this engagement, even while recognizing that I do think there are some very real benefits of being present virtually with your camera on. We've all been in Zoom meetings where we have our cameras off and we're muted and we're probably doing five other things and not participating in the meeting. We've also been in settings where your camera on and you're engaging face to face with somebody. And I think it's really clear that that face to face engagement helps facilitate productive communication. So, Ben, before we go ahead and take some action here, any more comments or input that you may have?
No, I think it's been very, very well stated. For those who've made comments about wanting that next level down, I want to say this again and again is you're going to be a part of that next level down. And for us, that's absolutely critical. So for those who are worried that there is some vagueness or ambiguity, just know, this is the starting point again. You're going to be part of helping to develop that next level down. And so we appreciate all the comments.
Yep. Great. Thank you, Ben, for that. So let's go ahead. We'll take, do this in two tranches, unless if there's any disagreement. Can I get a motion to approve the Salt Lake Project Area Master Plan and the UEPA Strategic Business Plan? We'll take one vote for that and then we'll consider both of the policies together. Let's see. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we approve the Salt Lake Project Area Master Plan and the Strategic Business Plan.
Great. Thank you very much. And Senator Stevenson, seems like you had your hand up perhaps for a second.
A second will work very well.
Okay. Very good. Tanisa, will you conduct the roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Schultz? And Miles.
Yes.
That passes with Dan Hemmert being absent.
Great. Thank you very much, Tanisa. And now let's go ahead and consider the two policies, whistleblower policy BP08 and internal control program policy BP09. Can I get a motion to approve these two policies? Senator Stevenson?
I would move that we approve the two policies that we've discussed.
Great. Thank you. Can I get a second? All right, Abby seconds. Tanisa, will you conduct the roll call vote?
Abby?
Yes.
Jerry?
Yes.
Schultz?
Yes.
And Miles?
Yes.
That passes with Dan Hemmert being absent.
Okay, great. Thank you very everybody. And again, appreciate the input. This helps gives us some direction. And now we get to continue to move full steam ahead on tackling, you know, the many issues and challenges and opportunities that exist. So we'll go ahead and now move to consideration of resolution 2022-13. Tanisa, will you please read the resolution into the record?
Yes. Resolution 2022-13, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority for the issuance of RFPs and awarding of contracts for rail consulting services, real estate agent services, and communication services.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Could you give us a little bit of context around this before we go ahead and seek a motion and a vote?
Yes, there's a number of things that are in play here. First of all, we recognize that the board is going to be going to a quarterly meeting structure next year. And I will appreciate the angelic voices that are coming into the room. I think that's always a positive sign at an inland port board meeting. Those were not the sounds we heard at some of the first board meetings, if anyone remembers. That we're hearing at the Capitol for those who are online. We're getting some feedback coming in. Lynn's just shut the doors. Thank you, Lynn. But we're moving to a quarterly cadence next year, and that puts us in a little bit more interesting of a circumstance. So the punchline on this one is basically we have three RFPs that we need to get done and actually start into the contracting phase. All of these are within the small procurement. Amy can correct me if I've used the wrong phraseology here, but the executive director typically would have the ability to work through and help negotiate these. but we're asking for the board specifically to give the executive director the opportunity to do so. The reason being, and I'll explain these three RFPs, there are some time issues, and specifically some timelines that we're going to be bumping up against before the March meeting, which is the next time we can get the board together. And so I'll walk through what these three RFPs are, but we want to be able to take that into consideration. What we're asking for, because we realize this is a little bit of a trust from the board, we are going to be asking for specific board members to volunteer on these RFP review committees. And again, I'll go through what these three RFPs are, and then we would ratify contracts at the March board meeting. We feel like getting into that quarterly cadence will require some of this give and take just a little bit. So we still will have ultimately those three contracts. And my other commitment is that I will be working with the board members as we go through these three RFP processes to ensure that we are involving the board in all of these decisions. The three RFPs, I'm actually going to save the communication services for last, which is where it is listed. First, the board has given us prior approval to go out for an RFP for a rail expert. This is absolutely critical for us now as we move into how do we actually work with rural communities? What can we do here in Salt Lake? We realize we've got to have rail expertise on staff. We have previously had, in a vendor form. At some point, we do intend to have rail expertise and logistics expertise on our staff. But right now, we feel like this is a better way to go about getting that expertise that we really need right now. And so that's the first RFP. The second RFP is for a real estate agent. We've talked a lot about this in public meetings before. Currently I've listed all of these out in prior meetings, so I won't list them here, but we have talked about all of the properties that the Inland Port currently has an interest in, whether it's through lease or potential ownership. So we're looking at those. We realize, again, we'd like a commercial broker to help us through some of those processes. We feel like we don't want to bring somebody on staff, but we feel like this is something that, to be fair, we want to be able to go through a public process to procure. This one is a little bit, I feel like I want to be on the safe side. So we are doing this through an RFP because there is the opportunity for a real estate commercial brokerage firm to make a lot of money. And so we feel like to do that before we award this, we want to go through a public RFP process. The third, and I know we're going to get into a little bit, there may be some questions on these, which we'll get into. But before we get into the detail, I want to just take a step back and say a huge thank you. Really, since the beginning, our office has been represented by the Exoro Group and the amazing Mara Carabello. She has done an outstanding job working with us from the inception, doing everything that's a comms marketing strategy firm would need to do and more. They have been an exceptional partner for our agency. We realize now things are getting really busy, and there's been a mutual discussion, and we feel like we understand now's probably a good time to potentially part ways. But I want to say, as part of this process, I want to say a huge thank you to Mara and to the Exoro team. What she's done for the port, what she's done for this agency, what she's done for the state, quite frankly, can't be understated, can't be overstated. And so we just want to say a huge thank you to her. And so I want to pause there and almost give it a moment of silence of respect for Mara's contribution. But that does require that we go out for an RFP to secure a new comms firm. When the review team looked at the RFP from a couple of months ago, I think there would be some who say, why don't you just award it to the next team? Those who judged that RFP actually only found that Exoro was the only one that met the minimum state qualifications. So we actually cannot go back to the next firm. So our recommendation is that first, we go to the state vendor list and see if there are any approved vendors. And second, if we feel like there's not, then we would issue another RFP. But again, we want to include that as part of this resolution here today. The dynamic here is, again, even if we go with the state vendor list, we would still like at least one board member to come in and be a part of that process and hear from those that are already on the state approved vendor list, which would, if we find the right person, we would not have to go out for RFP. But then if we do go out for RFP, that we would have a board member that's part of that process, at least one board member. Now, as a reminder, we can't have more than two. And so with both the, with, excuse me, all three of the rail consultant, the brokerage and the communications firm, we would ask for at least one representative from the board. You don't have to decide that today. If anybody wants to volunteer, they can. I am going to ask Representative Schultz if he wouldn't mind volunteering for the rail expertise, because I think that one's been very, very critical and he brings a really good sense of happening on that. If Jerry's willing to, I'd also like to potentially ask Jerry to serve on that one as well. So because that one's been really critical for our agency, and I think we want to make sure that we get that right. So I'm not going to volunteer anybody. I know we've got a legislative session coming up, and Miles and Abby and Victoria, I know you've got expertise in all of these areas as well. So ultimately, we'll decide and just leave it to the board, but we would like you involved in the review and decision process for each one of these RFPs.
Great. Thank you, Ben, for that overview. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one, I'd like to add a word under the, I'd like to add rail and logistics consulting services, because I think it's more than just rail, especially when you look at the proximity to the Northwest Quadrant with airport, I-80 and I-15.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And the rail is simply a means to an end of solving for some of these logistical issues. So thank you, Ben, for that overview. I think it's important to note that, you know, since May, as we came in as a new board over the course of the summer and the fall, you know, I know that we all felt at times that this was our full-time jobs. And we weren't just your typical board, but in a lot of ways playing an executive board role. And I definitely felt like more of an executive chair at times. As we went through the audit process and got that started and worked on developing, the plans and things that we approved today, bringing Ben on board, working on the team and making some structural adjustments there. You know, it feels like an appropriate time for us now to take a little bit of a step back and get out of management's business a little bit. You have to deal a little bit less with us while at the same time remaining incredibly committed fiduciaries of this organization. And so, Ben, we really appreciate your work, and moving to a quarterly cadence is exactly what typically you'd see with boards. And of course, as things arise, if we need to get together and have a quorum to discuss or make any decisions, then we absolutely will do that. But approving this resolution and similar resolutions in the future enables us to really empower the management team to go out and to do the types of things that you'd expect management teams to do under the strategic guidance and review of a board. So, unless if there's any other comment, can we get a motion to adopt resolution 2022-13?
Come on, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Your little thing was flashing. So if you do the motion, it would be greatly appreciated.
I will, Mr. Chair. I will make that motion. And I do want to just add that one word in that motion, the rail and logistics consulting services.
Okay. Perfect. We get a second for this motion, resolution 2022-13, with the addition of rail and consulting services.
I would second.
Great. Senator Stevenson, thank you very much. Tanisa, will you please conduct the roll call vote?
Abby?
Yes.
Jerry?
Yes.
Schultz?
Yes.
Dan Miles?
Yes.
That passes with Dan Hemmert being absent.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, we're making good time. Moving along, we'll now have a sustainability action study presentation from Mona. So Mona, go ahead and turn the time over to you. This is nice. I think Senator Stevenson ordered this background music for us.
We're just getting Mona's slides up and running, and then we'll get started.
Yes. Fantastic. Yep. And while you do that, Senator Stevenson's got a comment.
You know, I've listened to a lot of the public comment since this board was assembled and legislation put together to assemble it and all those things. And there seems to be a And I think it's kind of a misnomer that we've got the cart ahead of the horse in the way we're acting. I think someone likened it to a constructing an airplane while we're flying it today. I think Representative Schultz could probably give us a great lesson on how to build a house, how you put a foundation under it and then put some walls up, and you don't, you know, when you get down to the plumbing and the landscaping and all those things, they go in last. And that's really what I think we're trying to do here is we want a really good framework as we assemble this board, and we assemble not the board, but the business policies and those things that we work under. But we've got to have a foundation, and that's really what we have done. That's what our predecessors that on this board did originally, was establish a type of foundation, and we had to perfect that a little bit. But I just think that, we probably need to get past that we're not doing this right, because many of us have sat on these, on the construction of businesses, construction of a lot of governmental entities. And as we've assembled them from the base up. And I think that's what's going on here. And it's going on very well. So, I'm not saying I won't listen to those comments, but it seems like we're kind of drifting, and we seem to be focused on those. And yet I think if you look at the big picture, we've kind of got it right here. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevenson, for that comment, that perspective. Okay, Mona, it looks like you are ready to go. So go ahead and turn the time over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you to the board for this time and this opportunity to present.
Mona, can you pull your mic up a little bit closer to your mouth? Just want to make sure that everybody online can hear you as well.
Is that better? Okay, great.
Taste that microphone to make it work well.
Right. Perfect. Yes, thank you for the opportunity. Really excited to share this milestone as far as our sustainability initiatives within the Utah Inland Port Authority have been going. And just to back up and introduce myself, this is my first time presenting in front of the board. I'm Mona Smith, the environmental engineer. I've been with the Port Authority now since February of this year. So really excited to be here and to share. I'd like to start by saying that a robust economy and a healthy environment are not mutually exclusive. Sustainable economic growth is a key to meeting the needs of today and future generations. To balance growth and resiliency, it is essential to protect and preserve environmentally sensitive areas and critical natural resources, to adapt to the effects of climate change, and to minimize adverse impacts of development and transportation on air quality and resource availability. The Sustainability Action Study is a strategic document that empowers balanced economic growth by articulating a vision for sustainable development and environmental stewardship, along with how this vision can be integrated into various decision-making levels. This vision informs a sustainability strategy within a framework to advance sustainable development that will empower regional economies by facilitating smart, sustainable logistics-related development projects. So the enabling and amended legislation, as well as UIPA's strategic business plan, tasks the Port Authority with the cultivation of development projects that support these objectives, to respect the area's existing natural environment and land use conditions, to support the continued growth of the state's economy, to improve air quality and minimize resource use, to work in concert with and coordinate the efforts of all applicable stakeholders, to develop incentives to encourage green technology adoptions and supply chain, and to implement world-class, state-of-the-art, zero-emissions logistics. UIPA is committed to realizing its sustainable development potential through coordination with all relevant public and private stakeholders in the region. At a high level, the UIPA framework for sustainable development set forth in this study consists of green, resilient, and equitable themes carbon neutrality and net zero emissions should be the aim of all development within the UIP jurisdictional area. And I'll just caveat this, that that is in an ideal world, right? Developments should be purpose-built and increase the capacity of the inland port area to withstand social, economic, supply chain, and environmental events. And the communities that are affected by inland port area planning or inland port area developments should be intentionally consulted as part of the planning processes to promote improved accessibility, economic opportunity, connectivity, health, safety, and quality of life. In this sustainability action study, to set forth a sustainability strategy, two key assessments were conducted. The carrying capacity assessment provides a compilation of challenges that sustainable development strategies should address and guides the development of those sustainability strategies. Zero emissions technology assessment guides decision-making regarding investments in transformative technologies that reduce air emissions and contribute to air quality and energy efficiency improvements. The key carrying capacity considerations in the jurisdictional area that were identified in this study include air quality and energy, natural and water resources, transportation, and land use. And again, while UIPA does not have land use authority, we are committed to realizing our sustainable development potential through coordination and collaboration with our stakeholders. In this study, sustainability strategies were developed through a detailed assessment of existing infrastructure conditions and factors influencing key carrying capacities within the jurisdictional area, as well as engagement with local stakeholders and review of local planning documents. These strategies are high-level recommended actions for which UIPA can develop tactics in conjunction with various public, private, and non-governmental organization partners that support their implementation. The existing conditions regarding air quality and energy in the jurisdictional area are as follows. The area is currently in non-attainment for ozone, sulfur dioxide, and fine inhalable particles, also referred to as PM2.5. Planned and ongoing developments in the jurisdictional area can increase overall emission levels unless investments are directed towards net zero emission goals. A key objective for UIPA is encouraging the switch from conventional gasoline and diesel fuels to zero and near zero emission fuels in the heavy duty vehicle sector. And due to the anticipated shift from conventional energy sources to electricity for transportation operations, energy demands are expected to exceed supply. It is critical that sustainability and air quality considerations be prioritized alongside trade and economic needs. Some high-level strategies recommended in the sustainability action study to address air quality and energy concerns and constraints are to leverage available funds and incentive programs at federal and state levels for renewable energy, charging, and fueling infrastructure development, to establish means and platforms for ongoing conversations with stakeholders regarding the adoption of zero emission technology options, to explore policy measures to encourage zero emission development and zero emission vehicle adoption, and to future-proof zero emission vehicle charging and fueling infrastructure. The existing conditions regarding natural and water resources in the UIPA jurisdictional area are as follows. portions of the jurisdictional area are adjacent to the Utah Watershed Restoration Initiative focus area, and some parts of the area are also included in the National Wetland Inventory. Important natural areas are located in and around the jurisdictional area, including national wetlands, bird nesting areas, and wildlife habitats. There's also a predominance of soil with poor natural drainage, conducive to runoff rather than infiltration, making stormwater management a critical consideration for development. A major concern identified by UIPA stakeholders is with respect to the stormwater runoff from new development sites into adjacent sensitive natural and wildlife habitat areas. Some high-level strategies recommended to address natural and water resource concerns and constraints are to develop a stormwater and drainage master plan for the entire jurisdictional area. And this would be done in tandem with and informed by the Northwest Quadrant Stormwater Master Plan, which is currently being developed. To encourage compatible development near existing development to mitigate adverse impacts to water resources and natural areas. To continue to build UIPA's role in and grow its program for natural resource management. And to enhance existing conservation in open space areas in and around the jurisdictional area. Existing conditions regarding the transportation system and resources in the jurisdictional area are as follows. With the expected increase in passenger vehicle and truck trips in the future, road mobility will need to be addressed with sustainable transportation strategies. Adoption of zero emission vehicle and equipment technologies can help reduce current emission levels and mitigate the impacts of future growth in traffic and industrial activity. However, widespread adoption of such technologies depends on several considerations, including vehicle pricing and availability timeline, charging and fueling infrastructure availability, and the presence or lack of regulations. While site planning and development are ongoing, there is an opportunity to identify and mitigate transportation issues in advance of them arising. High-level strategies recommended to address transportation concerns and constraints are to develop a transportation management plan for the entire jurisdictional area, leverage land and infrastructure to develop partnerships with West Coast container ports, to develop staff and agency capacity to become a sustainable development and transportation resource center, and to create a business association within the jurisdictional area focusing on sustainable transportation management. And our last key carrying capacity consideration, land use, the existing conditions were identified as follows. The primary private landholders in the jurisdictional area include Rio Tinto Kennecott, Northwest Quadrant LLC, the School and Institutional Trust Lands Administration, or SITLA, and the Suburban Land Reserve and Property Reserve. Approximately 81% of the jurisdictional area is zoned for industrial or commercial development. 18% is zoned for agricultural and open space use, and the remaining 1% is dedicated to residential or mixed-use zones. Of the jurisdictional areas, roughly 16,000 acres, approximately 31% is developed, 24% is dedicated non-developable open space, active landfill, or mining buffer, 7% is pending remediation, 5% is existing roads or railways, and another 7% is planned for development. That leaves 26% of undeveloped land. Given the region's rapid growth and the conflicts that market-driven development can create within the natural environment, It is important for UIPA and its stakeholders to focus on sustainability of development in the area. Some high-level recommended strategies to address land use concerns and constraints are to create a master plan through a collaborative process with stakeholders, leveraging the sustainable land use development framework set forth in this sustainability action study. More information on that framework is included in the report, and you can find that in the documents that were uploaded to the public meetings notice website and also our website. To review and amend zoning ordinances, overlays, and development agreements, to consolidate development near existing infrastructure, to create incentives and a strong business case for private development adoption of UIPA sustainability strategies, and to facilitate a coordinated combined regional land use and transportation planning process with key partners and stakeholders. That concludes my overview of the study. And again, more information can be found in the executive summary, the final report, and the technical appendix, all of which have been uploaded online to the public notice website and to UIPA's website.
Mona, thank you so much for that presentation. I know we've got a couple comments here. Before doing that, I'd just like to know and thank Mona. It's been fantastic to get to know you, the opportunity to work together. For anybody in the public, if you don't know Mona, if you care about these issues, which I think all of us do, get to know Mona. She is incredibly competent. She is incredibly committed to these issues. And within the organization, she is fully empowered to lead out. And Mona, you've got the first two absolutely in your own. Unilaterally, you control those first two and you did a phenomenal job with it. On the empowerment piece, I know how empowered you currently are, but if there's ever a time where you feel like you're not, then let us know as board members, because we want to make sure that you are empowered, that you are leading out in the community on these incredibly important issues. I've got a couple other comments on some of the structural challenges we face as an entity on executing on this. But before I do that, Representative Schultz, I know you had a comment, and we'll hear from Ben, and then we'll proceed accordingly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mona, for the presentation. I really appreciate it. I just maybe want to kind of bring to light maybe some of what I think the goals should be, and recognizing some of the agreements that have already been in place and what our restrictions may or may not be. As everyone is aware, there was a development agreement that was entered into with Salt Lake City regarding the Northwest Quadrant and a lot of the land inside the jurisdictional area well before the Inland Port was ever a thing, before the Inland Port existed. And so I think what our goals should be, and hopefully is just to make sure that the development that happens in that area is more environmentally sustainable than what it otherwise would have been. And thanks to the agreement that we entered into with Salt Lake City, it also provides a revenue source for that to happen. And so I hope that, we can be reasonable moving forward in addressing the environmental concerns and making it better than what it otherwise would have, but also recognizing the fact that there are property rights out there and landowners out there and the current development agreement in place. So thank you.
Thank you for that, Ben.
So just to set the conversation, first off, for those who don't know Mona, as Miles said, she is one of the really talented environmental engineers in the state. We're very, very fortunate to have her on our staff. Excuse me. Sorry. So on the other side of that, we realized that there were some elements of this that we don't control. And we heard a little bit of that in public comment in terms of Salt Lake City has zoning control over most of this area. So we're aware of that. We want to be very, very respectful of that. But we also did not want to take away from what people had found through this study and through Mona working with our vendor. We felt like we wanted to be very true to what they came back with. So ultimately, we decided not to change anything. But we do recognize we don't control land use. There are some other elements we don't control. But we just wanted to have a really good, candid conversation. I think that's what this study does. We're hoping this sets up for our future actions, Representative, to your point, as the Inland Port, but that this would come before the board at the next meeting for adoption. And we just want to, again, say thank you to Mona for her great work. But hopefully that helps to answer a few questions.
Great. Thank you, Ben, for that. And would strongly encourage anybody in the public to reach out to engage with Mona and provide feedback on this. And then just to underscore what Representative Schultz and Ben has talked about, Mona did as well. You know, when the inland port was set up, we were given this mandate to shape development over an area. But we don't have property, we don't have land use, which means what we need to do is Mona's presented our priorities as an entity. But there are other people that have private property and there are other land use authorities, which means we need to lead by coalition building. We need to engage. We need to build common objectives. We need to listen and take into account those private landowners that have development agreements in place and those land use authorities with whom we closely work and partner to all work towards achieving these objectives. And as an entity, we have an opportunity to come in and to be a problem solver, to be a cheerleader, to lead by example, and to build this coalition to go and drive towards these very important outcomes while recognizing that we aren't the land use authority. And that's okay because we've got great partners with those that are. But as an organization, what Mona presented today, we'll get some additional input from the public. We'll refine and improve. But then that will be our stated objectives that we will lean on as we go and we engage with private landowners and with land use authorities in the jurisdictional area and across the state for that matter to drive towards these important outcomes. So with that, Mona, thank you very much. Appreciate all the work that went in that presentation, everything that you're doing, and we want to make sure that you're continuing to lead out on these important issues for us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and a very warm and heartfelt thank you to the board, to Ben for your comments and for the recognition. I really appreciate the time and the opportunity. So,
okay, thank you. All right, moving on. We've got 14 agenda items down, 3 more to go. So Amy, we'll call you back up here for the presentation of draft policies for future board approval.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. So these 3 policies, again, meet some of those audit asks that we've had from the legislative auditor back in September. So we have the record retentions. That was one specific from their best practices that we have a board approved policy. Really covers overall things like grammar requests, how those get handled, and overall record retention. This will be overseen by Larry. He's on PTO today. Otherwise he would be here. But to make sure that happens, as a citizen, I just made a records request to my own city today. And so I can understand how important it is that the public knows how we process these and that it's a very clear, transparent process. So the second one will be our personnel policy. This will be owned by Ben Byes as he's overseen our human resources activities as well as financial. I'm really looking at how our hiring practices, and again, this covers several of those points within the best practices checklist of how we deal with personnel, how we handle hiring, compensation, and so on and so forth. The last one is our segregation of duties. With this one, the advice that we had gotten with the recommendations was to make sure we have staffing policies that talk about how finances are handled, that not one person can be solely responsible for entering and approving and issuing payment. What we've done with our finance and audit committee is looked at the state finance internal controls checklist. And with each one of those, they cover segregation of duties. And so as Ben Byes and I sat down, we looked at what are those appropriate areas that we should put into this policy, from dealing with cash handling, disbursements, procurement, and so on, so that we don't have just one person independent in this whole process. So those are the 3 that we will be just open up for the public and for the board. Again, looking at the next board meeting to get approval on this. And of course, as a reminder to anyone that is looking to provide written commentary outside of public commentary during this meeting, you can go to our website, to our contact us page, and get us the specifics on what you would like. And we will address that. And of course, make revisions if we receive any commentary prior to the next meeting. So I'll pause there. Is there any questions from the board?
Amy, thank you so much for the work on this. We're just having a little bit of a sidebar conversation here about with all the trust that we have as a board and you, Amy, and the work that you're doing and in the management team on these policies, what can be delegated from the board in the future on administrative actions like these and administrative policies? Do these need to go through board approval, or are these the type of administrative things that we feel comfortable delegating to the management team and Amy in your role as chief compliance officer? I don't know, Ben and Larry, if you have any quick thoughts on that. Of course, welcome input from any other board members. But as we do think about this transition from being an executive board, if you will, over the summer and the fall to moving towards a world where we're more of a typical board as fiduciaries, we absolutely need to be involved. We have to have oversight. But at the same time, thinking through our process to get new board policies approved and initial presentation, comment period, another presentation, and then a final approval. If we're meeting quarterly, that means that I guess this is the first one, second one. So it's like, when is it? July until we're approving these as a board, which feels overly bureaucratic and burdensome on the administration team. And we don't want to spin our wheels on administrative items like this. We want everybody focused on executing on all the issues we really care about and the types of things that Mona presented on.
I'll let Amy speak to this as well. We've had this conversation in terms of what's the balance between what's staff and what's the board. And so we definitely will take the direction of the board. We've been playing more on the conservative side in terms of bringing more of these policies to the board. But on these ones specifically too, if you feel like if the board is okay with this, I would say we're probably okay with making these internal policy as opposed to board policy. Amy, what are your thoughts?
Certainly. I think there's one point that was in that checklist from the legislative auditors that said the board recommend the board approves the personnel and records retention policy. And so there's a lot of language around the board approves and guides, but I understand that respectful balance since we do want to review these annually as well, not just have them approved and be done with them. So we could move just to, if you want to maybe take the segregation of duties, but I think with all of these checklist items, we want to put what our stance is and when the legislative auditors come back to let them know what we've done. So I'll give you that open-ended feedback.
I would just add, Amy, that it's pretty evidently clear from the public comment that people really do appreciate being a part of this process. So the 30-day open public comment period for you to on these policies is probably something we should continue to do. It seems to be working well, and there's not even 30 days. I mean, from the last one to this, the two we approved today, I think there was 20 days, but some sort of open process for the public to comment in on as well would be helpful if we do move this to administrative.
Yeah. And I think Amy on those two in particular on anything in the audit, you know, that was our interest throughout the entire time was to take those recommendations and execute all of them. And so we want to make sure that we absolutely do that. And maybe this is, we're not voting on anything. This is all informational. And so I guess the one, request would be, in the spirit of empowerment, to think through what do we need to consider and vote on as a board? What are mechanisms, even if it's not a board policy, and I don't know what we've typically done, but to ensure an opportunity for the public to comment. And then perhaps there's some things that management should have the authority to develop a policy and execute on it as an administrative policy that's not engaging in strategic things that fiduciaries would need to weigh on and formally vote on. But then we could be apprised and those could be presented in a board meeting, which would then give us an opportunity to say, hey, you know, we'd like to see it this way or that, where we have questions or this feels like something that ought to be approved by the board. And again, we cannot disengage entirely, but on some of these, you know, some of these more detailed things, segregation of duties feels like something that perhaps the Finance and Audit Committee could review and approve, and then it could be a heads up given to the board. Sure. So long as there's an opportunity for public to provide some comments. So I don't think we have to ground this out. It's not an agenda item. We can't take any action, but something just to consider as we move forward. And again, in the spirit of empowering management on facilitating transparency and accountability to the public, and then also ensuring that the staff time is used towards accomplishing those critical substantive issues and the many, many challenges that exist, and that we don't get you, Amy, bogged down in having to manage us as board members and come back too frequently to get some of these administrative policies in place. So now that's some general guidance, but now we've got a phenomenal team in place to figure that out and bring it back next meeting and proceed accordingly.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Amy. Okay, we'll now go into the general public comment portion of the meeting. Tanisa, please open the queue. If you wish to give a comment virtually, now is the time to raise your hand to be added to the queue. Once we begin, we will no longer accept any public comment cards or additions to our virtual queue, and we will begin the public, and we'll go ahead and begin the public comment portion of our meeting. Upon recognition, the speaker shall approach the microphone or will be unmuted to give their comment. All comments will be taken in the order that we receive them. Nobody will be allowed more to comment more than once. Once your name is announced, you will have 2 minutes each, and look forward to getting your public comment and your input. So let's go ahead and start. We have a couple here in person. Let's see, Courtney Henley, please come on up to the microphone.
Hi, thank you so much for hearing what I have to say today. I'm Dr. Courtney Henley. I am on the board of the directors of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, and I serve on the House of Delegates of the Utah Medical Association. In September, the Utah Medical Association, about 150 physicians from across Utah, voted unanimously to try our hardest to prevent the legislature from spending more money on the inland port until we have a human health risk assessment completed. I want to take a minute and thank the people in the room, Representatives Waite and Rohner and Stan from the Utah, from the Stop the Polluting Port Coalition, Dita, Joan, Malin. These are heroes in Utah. These are fantastic people, the smartest people. We are so lucky to be hearing from them, and I really appreciate all of them. And then I look at the board and I think of a psychological experiment that was done years back where a study participant could send an electric shock to another study participant when they answered a question wrong. And what we saw is when people don't have the eye-to-eye contact like we have, they just keep giving the shock and they hear the screaming, and of course they weren't really being shocked, but people keep delivering that suffering. And every time that you guys vote on something here, you deliver suffering. Mr. Hart, your vote, there's a high school sophomore who's going to get an A on a math test today, but she's being transported to the ER with refractory asthma because of the vote that you cast. Mr. Hansen, there's a truck driver with COPD who stopped smoking 10 years ago, but he's going to die anyway because of the pollution from the vote that you cast. Abby, there's a woman who has tried to get pregnant twice, and she's going to miscarry her third pregnancy because of the vote that you cast. Senator Stevenson, your next high school reunion is going to have a lot.
Okay, Courtney, thank you for your comment. Okay, we'll go ahead and move to the first person in the virtual queue. Dr. Henley, please, thank you for your comment and your participation in the public process. Denise, let's go ahead to the person in the virtual queue.
Sure. We will first hear from Don Langston online. Don, are you there?
There you go. I'm here. I'm sorry. This, from everything I'm understanding with this inland port, it is bad for Utah. It is bad for the economy. It is bad for our citizens. I keep getting it unmuted or muted. Have you heard my comments so far?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear, Don. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, this is not good for Utah. There are, this is just like buying into a lot of problems, and it's not good for the United States. It is not good for Utah. It's not good for our economy. It's not good for our citizens. It's not good for our farmers. It's not good for our health. I am failing to see one thing with this proposed port that is good. That's, my vote would be no, completely, 100%.
Okay, Don, thank you for your comment. In the future, I'd encourage you to take a look at the master plan, what Mona presented and others, and would really welcome your feedback on anything specifically that we're working towards. Let's go ahead and go to the next in-person commenter, Elizabeth Waite. Representative Waite. My apologies on that.
Well, I'm currently Representative Waite, and thank you very much. And thank you for all the work you're doing. One of the things, the main thing that I wanted to comment on and watch my time here is that there have been a lot of references during this meeting to more an open transparency and collaboration and acknowledgement and involvement of stakeholders. And I can't impress how important those are. So that's the main thing that I wanted to emphasize is just the sense of inclusion and increasing inclusion and transparency and even invitation. Abby was talking about increasing that even more. I really appreciate the comment from Mr. Hart about that we can and should only walk as fast as the alignment from with all our stakeholders. That is really meaningful to me. In the next, starting in January, House District 26 will include half of the port area and none of Salt Lake City other than that. So it extends down into south into West Valley City. All of the people there, West Valley City has not made a lot of public comment or included the public very much with the port and the potential expected impact from port decisions and port everything, port progress. So I'm really interested and excited to see that House district be more represented and included by possibly West Valley City, and I'll work on that side, but also with the state. So thank you very much.
Representative Waite, thank you very much for being here, for your input, your service in the legislature. And you're 1,000% correct. That engagement with the public is making us as an entity better. This is a public entity. And so I'm so grateful to the many members of the public that we've had comment from, meetings with, phone calls with, dinners in their homes. And that absolutely shapes what we do. And as we move forward, Ben and the team know that that's an absolutely top priority for us, because that transparency, that accountability is going to help all of us drive towards these shared objectives. From my experience, everybody who's engaging in good faith has the same shared objectives. We're all working towards the same place, and that engagement and partnership helps us get there better. So thank you. Okay, let's go to the next person in the virtual queue.
Next, we'll hear from Brian Mensch.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Thank you. In UEPA's 38-page sustainability action plan, there is perhaps one sentence on the water consumption of future port businesses. There has been a steady stream of national and international news stories reflecting poorly on state management because of the, quote, environmental nuclear bomb, to use a term of one of our own legislators. That is the looming future of a once great Salt Lake being transformed into a toxic dust bowl. Many of those stories have pointed out that the largest contributor to the lake's demise is poor management of our water resources and unwillingness of our lawmakers to take conservation seriously or to rein in water consumption or curtail growth. There is near panic on the part of the public and even many of those same conservative lawmakers about the disappearing Great Salt Lake and the looming collapse of the entire ecosystem, the loss of lake-related industry, and massive loss of hemispherically important avian wildlife. Given that the port is still regarded as ground zero for the state's future economic growth, it seems as though very careful management of water consumption of port businesses would be front and center in UEPA's concerns, worthy of many pages in the report, not a couple of sentences. Also, let me point out that the document discusses at length a Pollyanna-envisioned future of zero emissions vehicles, but few details about how to achieve that. It also reflects an apparent lack of awareness that recent research has found that more than half of vehicle-generated particulate emissions do not come from the tailpipe at all, but from mechanical friction, brake pads, road dust, and tire breakdown, and that those emissions are just as toxic as those from tailpipes. Furthermore, because of the increased weight of electric vehicles, they have even greater non-tailpipe emissions. In other words, a new influx of even zero-emission vehicles from a future port is still a serious air quality problem. Thank you.
Dr. Mensch, thank you for your feedback. I agree 100% on the importance of water. I know that Mona feels and is very aligned with you on that. And so look forward to continuing to engage as we move forward and move beyond these higher strategic issues into more tactical issues on being able to figure out how we can play a role to be a productive partner in the management of the state's water resources. Let's go to the next person in the virtual queue, please.
We'll hear from Malin Mensch. After Malin, we'll hear from Terry Durfee.
I have a comment here that is trying to go perhaps to the next level of how do you find a solution that checks all the boxes on that sustainability plan that we just heard. Problem is, how do you expand logistics capacity in Salt Lake without making its air dirtier? For comments I made earlier, it's not expanding rail capacity per se, because a transload facility isn't commercially viable and a new intermodal yard is not commercially viable. It's not expanding warehouse stock because the stock is already adequate, as Ben Hart has told us recently. What is not adequate is the trucking capacity. And the thing that the inland port should seriously consider is doing something to directly expand that capacity without dirtying the air. And my proposal for doing that is to take advantage of the Inflation Reduction Act, which gives up to $40,000 credit for a zero emissions heavy duty diesel or yard handling equipment or for switch engines, and take the $150 million in bond money that UEPA has put together and assemble a fleet of clean, zero emissions equipment of any of those three categories, and then lease those clean zero emissions equipment out to, either the local trucking firms or Union Pacific or the warehousing firms that, have the warehouse handling equipment, all of which need to be converted from their diesel form to a zero emissions form, which is almost always electric.
Malin, thank you very much for your comment. We really appreciate it. You lay out some really, really good solutions and ideas that absolutely would ask Ben and the team to consider. And in fact, that's those are the types of solutions that I think is something within the ability of the Inland Port Authority to drive towards some of these outcomes that we all care about that Mona laid out for us. So thank you very much, Malin, for your comment, your input, and your partnership. Would love to take anything in writing you may have. And of course, you know, the team is available to meet as well to further discuss. So, Tanisa, how many people are left in the virtual queue?
We have 7 left in the queue.
7 left in the queue. Okay, let's proceed. We may not be able to get to everybody today given the 3-hour mark that we are quickly approaching, but let's see how far we get. So let's go to the next person.
All right. Next we're going to hear from Terry Durfee. After Terry Durfee, there will be Dita Seed.
My name is Terry Durfee, and I remain baffled by the insanity this board continues to perpetuate. We are probably 4 to 5 months from the total ecological collapse of the Great Salt Lake, and instead of addressing this monumental issue, we are still discussing railroads and warehouses. We were told that nothing major would happen until studies were done and the plans were complete, yet you went into a closed session this morning about purchasing land when these studies are still not complete, and I would say the plans are not even close to being developed enough. You continue to be heavily invested in rail when you have a report from an actual rail expert Professor Leachman, that tells you further rail development isn't viable for our state because the market isn't there for the import and export you keep mentioning. This makes absolutely no sense to double down on a system you've been told by an expert is not a viable option. I beg to differ with Senator Stevenson about the plans because even though there is definitely an order for actually building a house, the key is to have a blueprint, which is what the business and master plan should be, so that you know what rooms there are, the location, sizes, etc. What the current master plan and business plans are represent more of a wish list instead of a blueprint. It is essentially saying, yes, we want a house, maybe a kitchen, a living room, and some bedrooms, but how can you truly get it right without the directions that a true blueprint offers? You also keep mentioning you have no property and land use authority, so you're essentially telling us that UEPA has no actual purpose. If there is no possible way for you to accomplish enforcement of the environmental requirements and such, then what is your actual purpose other than being a vehicle for the legislature to waste taxpayer money? There are multiple mentions of generational economic development, but the only thing generational you're putting into place is an ecological disaster. Thank you.
Okay, Terry, thank you for your comments and everybody else. We really appreciate the public comments. To Deed and the five others in the virtual queue, my apologies. Representative Schultz and Senator Stevenson had to leave to head to another meeting. We've reached our 11 o'clock time limit on the meeting today, so we no longer have a quorum. And so we're going to go ahead and adjourn our meeting. Before doing so, we'd just like to note for anybody that didn't get a chance to comment in this general comment period, we strongly encourage you to provide written feedback, and that is shared with board members, and we do review that. And I know from past experience, some of that constructive public input has been very, very helpful to me as I try to think through a lot of these challenges and opportunities that we're facing as a state and as an entity. So with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn our meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you, everybody.